Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We go to the U.S. heartland now, where the aftermath from the police shooting of 18-year-old Michael Brown over the weekend can still be seen on the streets of Ferguson, Missouri, near St. Louis. There were more violent protests last night in a suburb that looks more like a combat zone.
Please continue moving peacefully, as you have been. We want to continue to make this a peaceful event. You must continue moving down West Morrison or Canfield.
Let's get a sense of where things stand. We're joined by Jelani Cobb, a contributor to The New Yorker and director of Africana Studies at the University of Connecticut. He joins us from Ferguson. Welcome, Jelani.
Thank you.
So a combat zone, is that an appropriate term? Is that what you would say it looks like in Ferguson?
That is what it looked like last night. I have not been in Ferguson this morning. I left Ferguson around midnight last night. And you know what I saw there was very reminiscent of a combat zone. I mean, I've never been in a combat zone, but it looked identical to the images that we see being broadcast back from places where there is actual combat going on.
What is the demeanor between law enforcement and the citizens of Ferguson, and who is attempting to lead and calm people's sort of spirits and passions right now?
I don't think that very much of that is happening, at least not that I've seen on the police side of it. There have been community leaders who have, called for peace. The family of Michael Brown has called for peace. I saw some clergy who were out last night. They were playing gospel music, I guess, hoping to kind of calm the passions that are running very high right now. But there was a real kind of climate of hostility that was kind of emanating from the police. And it was almost a given. Everyone knew that when night fell, there was going to be some kind of activity that took place.
Is this an open season kind of situation where the incident over the weekend has really brought out a lot of other sort of hidden tensions in Ferguson, a lot of outside agents coming in? Or would you say that it's very much focused on what the police did to Michael Brown?
Yeah, I've heard things, people saying both of those things. Some people have said that, you know, most of the violence and the anger is from people who don't live in Ferguson proper. But I've also talked with community activists who say that this is something that has roots that go back 10 or 15 years here in terms of, you know, economic underdevelopment and issues in, police and community relationships that have been problematic for a very long time. What I can say is that the veil of secrecy that has surrounded the investigation has done nothing to alleviate the tensions. People think here the secrecy, particularly not releasing the name of the officer, that the secrecy here provides a great deal of leeway, great opportunity for collusion, such that when the name becomes available, people really don't know, whether or not there's been coordination in terms of stories. We heard yesterday that the officer had a swollen face, but there's no way to really verify that, because no one has seen him. No one knows who he is, who he or she is. And so it's very difficult to develop any trust in that context for anything that the police are saying.
And there's no confirmation or even any suggestion that an officer was hospitalized that night.
No, there's no confirmation of this. And one thing that I have to say that has become, exceedingly obvious here is that, this started out as being an isolated incident or an individual incident here. But now there's been a much broader concern about the militarization of the police force, because last night, the street was blockaded and, the police were out in riot gear, which is, perhaps understandable, given that there have been instances of, looting and some vandalism. And so, they made a blockade across the street. And, people have seen that before. But what was atypical and what was shocking to see is that these police officers had two armored personnel carriers that were kind of, nose to nose, that were blocking the street. Many, if not most, of the officers had on some kind of military fatigue garb and helmets. And on top of each of these armored vehicles were, you know, officers who had high-powered assault rifles that were mounted on tripods. And so it really did not seem, you know, the people who were there, you know, protesting, some people peacefully. Admittedly, there were, you know, a handful of people who were yelling provocative things and saying insulting things to the police officers. But in no way did I see this as a situation that warranted people who were in what looked to be like a sniper's nest, you know, two officers that were hunkered down on top of these vehicles with these mounted weapons that, you know, looked like something that would be from Iraq or Afghanistan.
Well, on that subject, I mean, do you think this is a coherent top-down policy for trying to restore order in Ferguson, or are the cops just playing Black Hawk Down on some level and nobody's really in control of how this looks?
Well, I think the police believe that order can be imposed from the top down, and that seems to be the strategy. It almost, you know, I wrote in my post for the New Yorker blog that this is kind of like a municipal shock and awe, because even after the crowd dispersed, you know, they ordered the crowd to disperse around 8:30, and it began firing tear gas, but they continue to tear gas that community for up to 2 hours after that. Such that there was a large white cloud that was looming over that entire neighborhood. And because of the structure of the neighborhood, because of the layout, if you were in that community at the time that they began tear gassing, you were effectively trapped in it. These were subdivisions where many of the streets looped right back around to the outside or were cul-de-sacs. So you really could not get out of that community once you were in there. And they continued to launch tear gas well after, you know, the crowds had dispersed. They fired rubber bullets. They threw flash grenades. And it was hard to understand what threat justified this. Hmm. There were reports of Molotov cocktails. I certainly did not see anyone with a Molotov cocktail. There were reports of rock throwing. I did not see any rock throwing. I was at the very front of the protest, so
well,
I imagine.
Jelani, we'll have to see if these tactics, you know, de-escalate tensions in Ferguson. But right now, it seems very tense there. Jelani Cobb, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Jelani Cobb is a contributor to The New Yorker.